Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Webtoon Wednesday episode, and today we're going to be talking about a title called Exception. It's very timely with June being Pride Month. This is one of those titles that's very inclusive, and it really takes a look at some of these ideas. And you'll see when we start talking about it, the setting and everything, it's one of those titles that I wish had been around, and one of those situations that would have been great when I was in high school, having something to relate to and not quite feeling like you're fitting in. So I have the creator of Exception, Coco, with me today, and it's my pleasure to welcome her to the show. So thanks for joining me, Coco.
Hello. Yes, thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. And just in the interest of full disclosure, all you listeners and fans of Coco will know this. She's lives in the Netherlands, so half a world away from where I am right now, and through the magic of Skype, we're bringing this to you. So I always like to ask everyone when they come on for the first time, Coco, kind of about how they discovered comics and got into reading them and then transitioning to a creator from there. And I'm especially interested because you're going to have a much different perspective living in Europe as opposed to a lot of the artists and creators we've had on from Webtoon so far that live here in America. So why don't you give us your secret origin? How did you discover comics and then eventually make that transition to a creator?
Because I'm from the Netherlands, it's very different perspective. Like, we didn't really grow up that much with superhero comics. But comics were really big in Belgium and France, and so also in the Netherlands. And we have for the longest time, we still have some of our Belgium heroes in comics. They are very timeless. And even as a child, my father usually collected comics when he was a little kid. And when I was at an age when I couldn't read, maybe I was four or something, three or four, my dad had Suske and Wiske. I think the English name is Willy and Wanda or Spike and Susie. Like, those were from Belgium. And he just read to me, he was reading the comics to me in bed. So those were like my bedtime stories, you know, instead of just having printed books, he was reading me comics. So actually it's been spoon-fed to me since I was little. And by the time I got older, when I became pre-teenager, comics like Tintin and that sort of became like the kids stuff. Like, I was too old for that. But on the other hand, you only had comics for grown-ups, like, you know, very or sexually or very rude or with blood or stuff like that, or very realistic drawings. And I wasn't like that. And for teenagers, there wasn't much. So that's where actually manga came in for me, for maybe like most people from the 90s. Like, manga was the savior for the teenagers. Like, those were the comics we wanted to read and we wanted to see. So it was easy for us to just jump over from the comics we knew to something very different, because Japan was actually almost the only ones who understood writing for teenagers. So that was very interesting to me. And when I was about 12 years old, I figured out, grown-ups make the comics, grown-ups make animations or comics and stuff. And I wanted to do that. And I wanted to tell stories that I've never seen, because I was always like, I want to tell stories as well. And I always saw like guys taking the spotlight in a lot of fantasy action stories, like in animation and in comics. And I was like, I want girls to have that experience too. I want to have that in comics too and tell stories about that. So that's kind of where it started, that I really wanted to do that. And now later on, I see that a lot of girls who are my age or a little older had the same idea, because now it's exploding with girls in fantasy comics doing amazing stuff, and girls in a lot of cartoons that we see on Netflix and stuff. So I'm not the only one anymore. So that's cool. But I just really wanted to tell stories and comics about stuff that I wish that was for me back then, that now I've missed, that now I'm the older one. I can be like, I can give the new teenagers those types of stories that I always wanted to read.
Yeah, I think you're right. It has exploded over the last few years, and I think it's a good thing because it's so much easier to bring new readers in when they can look at a title, look at a comic, and relate to it and see themselves in it. And so we've come a long way. I think there's still a little ways to go, but it's definitely a good thing. I wanted to ask you, though, there obviously were American comics available as well, you know, Western comics, superhero stuff may not have been as readily available, but there was never any attraction to doing that kind of thing. You always migrated more toward the slice of life stories. Is that right?
Well, those comics were never really translated into Dutch. Mm. So I was too little to read in English. Like I could read a little English when I was 11, 12. I was pretty good at it already because I wanted to read manga. And those were also in English. But because manga kept me going so much, like Naruto and stuff, like that already kept my attention so much that I didn't really have eye for other comics at the time. Like in the part from being 11 till 17, I haven't looked at anything else but mangas. And only when I was 17 and I joined a school for learning art and stuff, I came back to my roots like, okay, no, wait, there are other comics. So I bought like more French comics, more American comics, more one graphic novel comics. Like I have my shelves full with more graphic novels than mangas, but you know, back then it was the other way around.
Yeah, I'm always curious what other countries think of American comics, because here, even now, even though we've come a long way with the comic book movies, because like when I was growing up, you didn't even tell people that you read comics. It was sort of, you know, one of those kind of secret things, because people would make fun of you if you were a teenager and you still read comics, like, oh, those are for little kids. And we've come a long way from there with all the TV and movie, you know, comic book characters are on the big screen now and making all this money. But even now, it's a struggle here in the U.S. to bring more readers, you know, into the fold and have a new generation of people actually reading comics, even though the characters and stories are obviously popular. Because you can see the success on the TV and in the movie theater, but for whatever reason, I don't know. Maybe us Americans are just too lazy and we don't want to read. And so I'm curious, in a place like Europe, where you know everybody reads comics from a young age until you know adulthood. I'm kind of curious. It's just a different way of looking at it. You know, it's sequential storytelling. Everybody likes stories, and it's just that different perspective where it's much more widely accepted to read comics at other places. And I don't know why we still have that stigma here. It's fine to like the characters and to go and see the movies and watch the TV shows, but for whatever reason, there's still some reluctance to read comics. You'll hear people say, oh wait, they still make those? I didn't even know.
Well, yeah, that's why I'm very grateful for webtoons and other platforms where you can show comics to show that it's not true at all. Like my comic is like meant for teenagers, but in the Netherlands we only believe in comics for little kids and for adults. And for everything in between, they don't really believe that. So I had the hardest time to convince people that teenagers do have the money for comics, but they're mostly neglected and they're seen as, you know, like it's not cool. So they're not there, you know, they're not loud, they're not partying. They are at home doing their homework and just, you know, gaming and stuff, but they like comics. And in the Netherlands, we don't really feed that. Well, in the past few years, I've seen a big change. Like we finally, like 3 years ago, we had our very first Comic-Con. So you could finally see how much nerds we actually have and how much people we can actually target for those types of comic, because they're there. You just need to have parties for them. And we finally have that. It took a long while, but we actually kind of do now. And I'm actually doing pretty well in the Netherlands because I'm like the only one right now who is making teenage comics. Like, it's really weird for me. Like, why? I know there are more, like they're in France and they're in Belgium and everything, but I'm the only one in the Netherlands. So that's just crazy for me.
Yeah, and this title Exception, is this your first published work, or have you had other titles published work in the past?
Not really like whole published albums, but I've been like in the paper or in a magazine with like a little comic or something. Those were mostly on a commission, or sometimes I had a little comic and I was like, well, do you want to have this? And sometimes they were like, yes, we want this. So I was pretty out there to trying to sell myself. And then after that, they came to me, so it worked out. But yeah, Exception is my very first published story, yes.
Yeah, why don't you tell our listeners that may not be familiar with it what the story of Exception is all about?
Well, Exception is about teenagers in high school, like story as old as time, you know, but with very different type of characters. Like, we have the whole LGBT community now and everything's different now, so I really want to have to like revamp on that story, but with new characters, but like characters you always see in the background, never be in the foreground and never be like the main characters. So I really wanted the weird people to be the main characters for once, not the, oh, they look pretty, but they're being bullied. I don't know why, because they wear glasses. Like, that's mostly the only thing. But now I'm like, no, they really need to have a story. They have like something with their family or something, you know, in school, or they are the bully or they're not the bully, or, you know, like trying to dig deeper into that genre.
Yeah, and being that this is your first published work, the story obviously means a lot to you. What was it about this story that when you had a chance to create something with Webtoons, you said, okay, this is the story that I want to tell that, you know, includes diversity and is much more the kind of the world outside your window, so to speak?
Well, the first thing about Exception was actually like I made two character designs. I made like a black gothic girl. I was like, well, that's a bit cliche. People draw that all the time. So I was like, well, I make an opposite character, like a guy who has like rainbow hair, does a lot of colorful stuff and everything. And when I showed those characters to my friends, like, what do you think? And a lot of them, everybody was confused with Arcus, the guy with the rainbow hair. They're like, is that a boy? Is that a girl? Is he gay? And I was like, I didn't even think about it. I was like, it's just a guy wearing what he wants to wear and, you know, doing what he likes. But everybody was questioning its gender and everything so hard. I was like, oh, I need to address this, like how stupid it is, how people are trying to genderfy everything around them and just trying to, you know, make it something that they understand. But you don't really have to understand everything. Just like the character or not, you know, like I was so stubborn like that. Like, why? So, I really wanted to point that out in the comic and like really dig deep and make it even worse and like, you know, give people the reaction real people have on them in my stories.
Yeah, it's not everything needs a label. You know, we're all unique in our own way, and it does seem. And I think even people, they're not doing it maliciously. They just want to make sure they've got everything they see. Okay, I know where that goes. I know which box it belongs in. And you know, people are much more complicated than that, right?
Yeah, that's fine. Like, I'm the same. You know, when I meet someone and it's a trans woman or a trans guy, I'm like, okay, so he, him, okay, cool. And what's your name? So I can refer to you to your name mostly, so I don't get confused and don't have to, you know, offend you. And I don't think like when people are trans or non-binary or whatever, address it. If you don't address it, people will assume. So don't get angry when they assume. So I hope it comes from both sides, you know, like if you give the information, it's fine. If you don't give the information, don't get offended, but just, you know, people are just, you know, just have to think people are stupid. I'm stupid too. We just you know, we know what we know.
Yep.
And we, we see what we want to see. So we have a lot to learn about each other.
So once you had the character designs for Maud and Arcus, where did you pull the inspiration to kind of flesh them out as characters? Did you base it on people you knew? Did maybe teenagers you know? Or did you think back to when you were in high school? Like, where did you kind of, you know, look to start building these characters out?
Well, from everything and nowhere. Like, at first, like, I had these two characters and a friend of mine, Esther, she had two other characters. And we were like, oh, we can put them together. And we thought about fun stories to do. And we just, you know, we were a bit into shoujo manga, you know, like love romance stories. So we were like, oh, we can do like a fun drama romance with these characters. Like, I'm actually exceptional. It's a bit outside of my box, to be honest, even though this is my very first thing. I'm always for the epic fantasy stuff. So this was totally new for me. But my teachers at the time for comic school were like, if you want to make comics, start with something you know. Start with something that's close to you and that you understand. So then the people who you want to give that story will understand it too. Like, make something relatable. So we took that at heart and we wrote it together at first. And after that, I took it over because she was busy with other stuff. And then I wrote it myself further and with stories from her school period and my school period and stories I heard online from people and friends. I just kind of put it together to make it a real cool thing. With like halfway into writing the story, we sort of, or I sort of, when I took it all over, wanted to put more LGBT in it because a few years ago that LGBT like exploded a lot and with the flags and everything. So it's like, well, I can try to take that into my story more because I'm already busy with it. So why not put it in even more to just give people a place that they can relate to who are mostly not in this kind of comics. And I just really wanted to do that.
Now, when you're writing the story, you mentioned your friend Esther, you know, stories that she had from when she was in school. Are you drawing inspiration from events that happened to you? Like, obviously, you're how can I put? I'm not even sure how to say it. You're not, you know, gender queer or anything. You know, I'm not sure what the term is, but. Because, so, for example, when I was in high school, so long ago, not to
myself, so long ago.
Yeah, it wasn't talked about. Like, I didn't necessarily have to, I wasn't confronted with it the way kids are now, with people who are non-binary and, you know, they're just trying to be themselves. Back then, the idea of that was, you know, completely foreign. You couldn't even approach it. So I don't really have, in terms of that, don't really have a touchstone to relate to because I didn't live through that kind of experience. But it is a universal idea of this not fitting in and wanting to be yourself and bullying. I think we all saw that firsthand in high school and, you know, secondary school and such. So I'm not sure where you fit on the timeline. Was there some of that when you were in high school, some of the non-binary stuff, the gender conformity stuff, or are you drawing more from your experiences just in terms of kind of the classic trying to fit in and being a teenager and discovering your identity and such?
I think it's a bit of both. Like when I was in high school, I always assumed like the term tomboy was a thing. And I felt like a tomboy. I felt really much like, well, I like Pokemon, Dragon Ball, all that type of stuff. I was better friends with guys than with girls because I was a nerd. I liked games and those animated series and stuff. And with I also like superheroes. Like with DC, you had the series Teen Titans. Mm-hmm. I really love Teen Titans. I have a few comics of them as well. But you know, I could only talk to mostly guys about that sort of stuff because a lot of girls weren't into it. So I always just accepted that I was like a tomboy. I've never really had the idea of like, oh, maybe I'm a guy, you know, like, no, that was never a thing for me. But what I did experience was that there was a transgender guy in my class, and he was very popular. Funny enough, he was really popular with like the loser guys of the group. Like you had, you know, like the guys who were like a bit didn't really speak their mind or something, or were always bullied. Like those guys really looked up to that transgender guy because he was so confident that he was a guy and everything, and he spoke loud and clear and everything. And I had very every time I wasn't really close with him or anything, but every time when I saw him and he was always making jokes and stuff, I really respected him for what he was doing. And I was just like, you know, admiring it from a distance. So in retrospect, I didn't really have to deal with it myself, but I saw it happening slowly around me.
Yeah, it's so strange. And I wonder if that's a cultural thing, because again, here, you know, here in the US, it seems like back then, I mean, there had to have been, you know, gay and lesbian people in my graduating class. There was over 3,000 students there at my high school. So there had to be, but you just didn't hear about it. I think it just was, you know, something that was still hidden kind of behind the scenes. So in terms of the story exception, when you decided, okay, I'm gonna take these characters, I have a great idea for this story, and you started building out the world and the narrative, what did you find to be the most challenging part? Was it kind of fleshing out the characters, or was it building the world and the setting itself? Was it maybe a bit of both? Was there anything in particular in your mind that stands out as a little bit harder than maybe you expected?
To give every single character their own minds and to have them work off each other. Like not have every character like the same ideas and stuff, and give them more emotion. Like first I had Arcus was like always the happy one, and Maud was always the grumpy one. But I was like, no way, they're human, they're three-dimensional. You need to give them more emotion. So of course Arcus can be sometimes sad, and Maud can be happy and everything. And it was really hard at first to flesh out these characters. But once the characters were like all written out, like I know everything about them right now. Like, you know, if they have allergic reactions to anything, what they're afraid of, what they like, what they dislike. So when you have characters written out that well, like the story took about 5 years or something to make, like within school time and everything. You know, sometimes it took like a few months we didn't touch the story and we took it back. So we had a lot of time to just flesh out the characters as well as we wanted. And finally, when the characters were done, we could just set them in any setting we want and a story will play. Like it's very character driven and not plot driven. And that was what I wanted to go for, because I always go for plot driven stories, but this one is very character driven only. So I was very happy with that when the characters were done and I could finally just put them in like first year till last year. And that's like the whole story.
So that'll be how it ends. You do have an ending in mind when they're done with school, that'll be the time to bring the strip to a close.
Yes, the idea is like that they discover who they are and how they're going to survive school. You know, like some people haven't really figured out yet if they're anything in the LGBT spectrum or not. Like at the end of school, in the last year, we know who graduates or not. Maybe some fall out, maybe not. And if people feel like they're something in that LGBT or not, or, well, you know, you're always something. Like even straight, you can be straight ally. So, you know, you don't really have to acknowledge that it exists. Just accept everybody for who they are and accept yourself and stuff like that. So, that's going to be the conclusion, like who gets there.
Yeah. And so we just had season one finish up. So each of their school years will be a season with a small break in between. Is that how it's planned out?
Mostly yes. Like in the first year, it's like one season is the first year, second season it's the second year, and I think from there on the third season, let's say third year, I have them split up more, because right now I'm just planting a lot of seeds. Like the story is so you know, fleshed out, like okay, we're planting a lot of seeds, like this is coming back and this is coming back and this will explode somewhere there, or, you know, like I'm building up story right now. And Yeah, so I think right now the idea is it could take about 8 seasons or so for like 4 or 5 years of school, because some just need a little bit more story to tell in the last few years.
Got it. Season one ended on a pretty big real life situation. I have to imagine that, you know, again, we don't want to give spoilers. If you haven't read it, go and check it out. But there's just a big event that happens with Arcus and his family that I imagine is going to be a pretty big focus of season two. Is that right?
Well, not season two. It's going to be a focus, all right. Like throughout the season, you will see a bit of it. But it becomes most important very much later on. Like right now, I just wanted to show that even though you have this perfect life, you look perfect, you're like, you can have everything you want in your life, still there could be something wrong in your life. Like when you're, you know, when you're rich, it could be something totally different. And when you're, when you're poor, you just, you're maybe lucky because you have everybody in your family or something. So every bad thing has a good thing and the other way around.
Yeah, you're really playing with that. And I love that you kind of show up behind the scenes, like Maude, for instance. You know, she tries to do her homework at school and gets teased about it. But it's because when she goes home, her mom is so dysfunctional that she's got to kind of be the one in charge, you know, clean the house, make sure the bills get paid and all that. And it's a lot of stress for, you know, a kid. And yeah. But she doesn't tell anybody about it. She hides it. And I think that's such an interesting and relatable theme, because it just goes to show, like, everybody has a story. Everybody has baggage. Everybody has challenges and things that they've either overcome or that they're currently facing. And a lot of times we keep those to ourselves. And when you meet somebody, or, you know, even a stranger on the elevator or what have you, it's always nice to, you know, just have compassion and not be mean, be open-minded, be, you know, just be compassionate, be understanding, I guess is the word I'm searching for, because you never know what somebody else is dealing with.
Just being nice to each other, you know, there's no reason to be grumpy to each other because you don't know the other person. So, you can have an emotional breakdown, of course. And then when you're angry at somebody for no reason, then, you know, if you're that person somebody's angry at, just think that it's not you, it's something they're going through. Right. It's not your fault. You know, just keep in mind that as long as you're a good person, you're not doing anything wrong.
Yeah, that's really good advice. If you're a good person and somebody gets grumpy, they're probably going through
something.
It's not
their fault. It's their problem. They're going through something, and maybe you could help, but don't, you know, conflict yourself too much in other people's lives if you don't know them enough to do that.
Yeah, the other thing that I wanted to mention before we move on to talk about the art a little bit is this idea of fashion. It's one of the things that kind of bring Maude and Arcus together. They have this, both have an interest in fashion. And it's so funny, it's so coincidentally, my daughter, just a couple days before, she's 7, and she was drawing. She loves to draw, but she's never drawn clothes before, and she was drawing clothes. She was designing different outfits. And it's so funny, because here we have these two characters in Exception, Arcus and Maude. And right away when Arcus meets Maude, he's like, oh, are you drawing clothes? I do that too. Let me show you my designs. So being that these two main characters both have that interest, is that an interest of yours? Is that what brought it to the story?
Well, I always liked, you know, designing my characters, making their outfits. And I was a bit, I mean, they're making fun of it now, but, you know, with cartoons and shows and anime and stuff, everybody's always wearing the same thing. Yeah. Like, you know, with Family Guy and stuff, they make jokes, and with SpongeBob that they have a whole closet with the same clothes. And I'm like, oh my God, like something that's kind of irritated me always. Like, it's cool when they dress differently from time to time. And especially when you're doing a high school thing, you can't have them wear the same thing all the time. They have other clothes, you know, like it's still all fiction, even though it's our world, but you know, still different clothes. And I just really like making clothes that don't exist. Like, you know, I don't want to be like a fashion artist or something, but I really like drawing clothes on characters. Like, oh, I want to see that on a person. Like, I can buy that in stores, but I can draw it on this character.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I think the reason that everybody used to have the same clothes was just for speed, right? Like, you could do different things.
Yes.
You only had to, like, animate the head. And then
it's about also, money and time and everything, yeah.
Right. And then when you talk about, like, older comics, when, you know, they didn't have the kind of the technology of today to make things look more clear and not muddy, especially when you're talking about old newsprint stuff, you know, the quality of paper, the colors and such. You had to keep everybody in the same outfit so people could identify. Otherwise, you weren't sure who they were. But that's not a challenge anymore. You know, you read something on Webtoon, the colors are clear, everything's bright. So it's real easy to distinguish. You know, you don't need that touchstone of, okay, this guy's wearing a green shirt and red pants, so I know that's Bill or whatever.
Yes, well, yeah. Well, that's what it is with good character design. Like, if you have a good character design, you can put a shadow over it and you still know what character it is. Like with Pikachu, if you put a shadow over Pikachu, you still know it's that character. So if you do that and it works, then you're like, well, I can just put on everything I want because you still recognize this character.
Yeah, as long as the silhouette is there and, like you said, it's designed well, then people should know who it is.
Yes.
Now, how did you develop your visual style for the story? Is this how you illustrate all the story? Because I can't imagine that you use this exact same style if you were to do a fantasy story, like you were saying. So how did you develop the visual style for Exception?
Because, yeah, I wanted to, this was for my very first time where I was like, okay, I wanted to really make a first album, like a series. And I didn't really have that much time, actually. I want to try doing this in like a year, like the first album, the first season, make it in a year. And I struggled a lot with that. I wanted to do too much stuff. And I made a few smaller comics before, like with watercolor or with more digital painting or more realistic styles and everything. But for the genre and like a comedy drama and for the age, like for between 12 and 16 is mostly the age for this comic or older. It's like a better style for the eye, for that age group. Like, with, you know, we have like Steven Universe now and a lot of stuff that kind of looks like this. Mm-hmm. But I've been trying to develop this style before Steven Universe and My Little Pony and all that stuff was a thing. So when all those things came out and I saw it and Star Wars is the Force of Evil, I was like, oh, my God, I'm actually working into a style. Oh, that's already happening or something. It was really weird for me. Like, I was like, okay, like, how can I fit in with this? Like, they really do catch the audience that I want to catch, but I don't have the fantasy elements in it. So I really wanted to see, like, can I put in this idea of a fantasy element into a realistic drama comedy story?
Yeah, I think it works really well for the story because it's light, it's bright, it's a very clean style. And then when you do deal with maybe some of the more negative emotions or situations, people being bullied, whatever, it's almost more impactful because the art style is such a happy style that, you know, it's kind of, it makes it stand out more. You know, when
I really want to hit people in the face, like when it's like, oh, it's a comedy, ha, funny. But then it was like, you know, something sad that happens, or like with the final of the first season, and then people are like, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a funny, happy style, but they're still like, you can still tell a very emotional story with it.
Yeah, it's you deal with some mature ideas, and like you said, it's very impactful with that style. Has there been a good reaction from your fan base? Like, did it take off right away, or did it take a little while to build up?
Especially in the Netherlands, it took a little while, not because there weren't people who wanted it, but because there was not, again, we don't believe here in comics for teenagers. So who was going to help promote me? Who was going to do that? Well, I had to do everything, almost everything myself. Like I had to put it online, see if people wanted it. And on when I was on Webtoons, like it exploded somehow out of nowhere. Like after I first posted on Discover, and then after like 1 or 2 months, I think, in the second month, I suddenly got more than 10,000 followers, like out of nowhere, because Webtoons picked it up and just put it on the front for just a day. Mm-hmm. And sometimes nothing happens. Sometimes you get like maybe 1,000 more, like that's cool. But I got like, I don't know, 9,000 more than I usually had. So within a day, I was like, what's happening? So then it took off and it just started to grow and grow and grow. And people in the Netherlands, like there are a few, a handful of people here who have Webtoons. And when they knew about me that I was Dutch, like a lot of people started to share with other people, like, oh, this is one from our country and stuff. So I do a lot of conventions as well. Every convention I was going, when people saw my art, they were like, oh my God, it's an exception. And then they looked at me and they were like, did you draw it? You know, like they couldn't believe they saw the person behind what they read online. Like that's so funny now to me.
So when it really exploded, the reaction from the fan base was one of, oh, this is something that we never knew we always wanted? Or what were people saying?
A lot of people were like, well, finally something I can relate to. Like there were a lot of people who never could relate to anything, you know, drama high school based, because it was always so flat out characters. Like, okay, we know this one and this one. But these are so more different, not deeper than any other, but they're different. And for a lot of different audience, like mostly the LGBT, who have almost no comics to feel relatable to, feel finally that they're at home somewhere or being represented.
Now, has there been a particular fan interaction that stands out in your mind? Maybe somebody that say, I was struggling and thank you for the story. It's, you know, something I can relate to, as you were saying.
I had like maybe 2 emails about it and a few comments in the Discover section that there were a few who were finally ready to come out to their parents about being bisexual or gay or something, or trans even. Like they finally found the courage that, okay, if my family really loves me, then I can do this. You know, like, and that they found the courage in this comic and they were thanking me for it. So I was like, well, you're doing it, you know, you're being brave enough, but I'm happy I could give you that, you know, that push of showing that this is okay to be yourself.
Well, it has to be really rewarding for you. I mean, it's kind of the point of what the idea to start the story was, right? Like when you showed the character designs to people and they wanted to put them in a box and you're like, no, it's much more complicated than that. So you're seeing sort of real life situations that mirror that. So you must have felt like you were getting your message across, that initial idea for the story.
Yeah, I was stoked. I was really happy and was like, yeah, I needed a comic like this when I was that age. And I'm so happy that I'm at that age now that I can give like the 12-year-olds still older, I can give them that story to show how good it is to be unique and not go with the crowd and just be yourself and, yeah, creative in every way. And I was never down for it. Like my family really loved me making art and everything. And, you know, sometimes in high school, people were a bit jealous or didn't want to notice my art skills or anything, but I didn't care. I just did whatever I wanted. But there are a lot of people who do get impacted by it and don't dare to do it. And they find comfort in comics that represent them, so they feel like they can do it again.
Yeah, and like I was saying earlier, you know, we really need a new generation of readers. And the best way to do that is, first of all, you got to tell good stories. But then to build on that, you know, you tell stories that people can see themselves in, that they can relate to. and that's how we bring new readers in.
Yes. Yeah, I first thought that it was maybe too far-fetched. Like, Argus was so weird. I was like, well, nobody can relate to this character. Like, I hope people enjoy him for what he is. But a lot of people were, like, relating to him, not because they look like him, but because, like, they're also outcasts because of, like, one hair color, or they are a bit fashionable, weirdness or something. Like, they do relate to them without looking exactly like the character. So I'm very happy that people can look deeper into them than how they look from the outside.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Let's switch gears here and talk about Webtoon specifically. You mentioned it being on the Discover side and then, getting picked up, being on the front page and blowing up. So how has the experience been with Webtoons, both in terms of that and also kind of behind the scenes working with an editor and having the support and that sort of thing?
Well, first off, when I knew that I was going to do this as featured, I was like, okay, I'm moving out. So because I was still living with my dad and I was just barely making it every month with what I was doing. But when with Webtoons, and I knew what they could help me with payment and everything, was like, well, if this goes on for half a year and then every half year for a longer time, I'll just do it and I can finally live on my own. So right now I'm living on my own for the past 6 months now. So that's really been a cool change that they helped me with.
And working with the editors and such, was that something that you feel has improved the story, or do you feel like you pretty much had it dialed in already?
With every artist, we are critics ourselves to our own work. So every time when I'm done with pages and I'm looking back, like, I was like, maybe I should have fit in more of this, or I should have told it differently. So I was very happy that when I first did the whole season myself, we could look back on the whole season and nitpick all the stuff like, well, that was a bit flawed, and just flesh it out more, give it a few more panels, a few more thoughts, and changing the dialogue a little. So I think now finally it's becoming better and better just every time. But I think now this is the good final first season. I want to move on to the next.
And is Webtoon big in Netherlands? So many of your countrymen there read comics. Are they aware of Webtoon and that it exists and they can read comics for free?
I honestly don't know that much about it. Like, I go to a lot of conventions, but that's just it. I only know in the convention world, like on anime cons and comic cons, that there are people who know about it. Not the majority, but a lot of people do. But I don't know outside of that because, it's still like from maybe 1,000 people who go to Comic-Con, maybe a little 50 or maximum 100 people know about Webtoons, I think, something like that degree. Like, there are a lot, but not like a bunch, because Webtoons lets me know, like, they mostly promote in the America, not outside. So I wonder if they ever do or something, but right now it's only America promotional stuff. So we in the Netherlands, we just have to figure it out. But I'm happy that a lot of Dutch people actually do and are curious enough to find Webtoons in one way or another.
Yeah, and you mentioned there were some other Dutch creators that have Webtoon. Have you had a chance to meet any of them in person?
There are a few. I don't know. I knew like two people who already had Webtoons before I started on Webtoon. I am the first one to be featured right now. But after I started posting on Webtoons and when it became very, very good for me after like 2 months, I was like telling people on Facebook and everything, like, the Netherlands is small. Like, you can, like, if I tell you about a Dutch, we almost know everybody. Like, every Dutch
everybody
who is in the comic scene knows everybody. We have each other on Facebook. Like, I can't say anything about someone without everybody knowing about it. So that's a funny thing. But after I posted a lot more people joined, and I really love that. So after I think episode 30 or something on Discover, I did like a little episode with showing everybody from the Netherlands, like, okay, here's everybody from the Netherlands who also has a Discover page. So that was pretty fun. But I know I have seen everybody who has posted on Webtoons at least once, or 5 times or 10 times. They'll see each other on conventions and stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like a really good community. You all support each other.
It's very close. Yeah, we're all very close. We're all colleagues and we help each other out. And I give people tips. People give me tips. We can ask each other everything. It's really great.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I know that when it comes to Webtoon, there's always a deadline looming. But I did want to ask you just for some advice to maybe an aspiring creator, somebody who's just getting started with Webtoon. When you look back on your journey, is there anything that you would do differently? You know, maybe a mistake that you would avoid if you could?
Yes, just because mine is about real people in real situations and high school. Do your research, because I did a few flaws on, I know a few transgender people, and I've looked up a few transgender stuff, and I wanted to make like this really cool transgender character, and I did, and she's amazing, and I love her, and I want to take care of her. So, but in my first time trying to explain what it is to be transgender, I did a few mistakes in the texts. But we fixed that for the featured version. But I was like, oh my God, no, that was so stupid that I thought it feeling like this. But it felt differently or something. Well, everybody has a different feeling about it. But I should have put more intention into it and have, like, I didn't interview transgender friends of mine because I was afraid, you know, like that I wanted to do that. But when I actually asked them, they were like, no, they were totally okay with it, and they loved it because I was doing it for a good cause. So don't be afraid to ask people you want to know about. If you write about someone or something that's not you, like if you're not gay but you want to write something about a gay person, ask a gay person about them and their life, and then you know, you have more character depth for your own characters.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And it's something that seems obvious, but as a creator, you know, we're always nervous to, you know, to put ourselves out there. And I could see somebody, a lot of people actually making that mistake. So that's good advice. Well, I wanted to give you a chance, Coco. Anything you want to say to our listeners or your fans who may be listening? The floor is yours. Anything you want to say?
Well, just be yourself, accept yourself, accept others, and just please accept my comic for what it is. And please don't ask for more pages than I can handle. I'm doing my best. Like, people always ask for more, and I know the anticipation of waiting, but I'm doing my best. 2 pages a week. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's tough when you're not only creating the story, fleshing out the characters, scripting it, then you're drawing it, rendering it, coloring it. It's a lot of work. I my hat's off to any Webtoon creator and yourself in particular, when you're doing it all yourself. It's a labor of love.
Yeah, and sometimes people are like, oh, I wish that character done this or that, or this is stupid because he needed to do this or that. But that's something that happens like 3 episodes later, and like, yes, it happens, but I can't tell you anything about it. Just keep reading. Like, if you have any questions about characters or plot or whatever, first wait until the whole series is done. Then after that, you can still ask me things.
All right. Well, if any of our listeners want to follow along to find out when you, first of all, when Exception is coming back, when you have other work, all that kind of stuff, where's the best, or even interact with you online, where's the best place to follow you?
The best place right now is Instagram and Facebook. Just Colorby or Colorby 4 on Instagram, but you will instantly see like Arcus or an Exception picture. You will know it's me.
Great. And I'll put links to Coco's social media in the show notes, everybody. So if you're having trouble finding her, you can go and click there. Well, I look forward to the return of Exception with season two, Coco.
Yes.
And best of luck with the strip. I can't wait to see how everything plays out.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. July 23rd will be season two.
Great. So in just a few short weeks, Exception will be back, everybody. So thanks again for joining me, Coco. It was a real pleasure. And you're welcome to come back anytime.
Yes, thank you for having me.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.